Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting this week is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones. Our Features Director Caroline is off today, but will be back with us next week. But she's not gone entirely, as she conducted this week's interview, and that is with Raphael Solo, the CEO of Fraser. She sat down with Raphael to discuss the state of the superyachting industry and a little bit about his background in boats. But first, Charlotte, how's your week been?
It's been all right, thank you. Lots of stuff going on. Sometimes I feel this is the best and worst job in the world because it's so lovely writing about all these boats and hearing about them from the owners. But it is so frustrating at the moment not actually being able to get out and see them and meet people. I think everyone's feeling that a bit after almost a year of being locked down, especially over here in the UK and in London. But I've had an interesting couple of weeks touching base with speakers for our Superyacht Design Festival in June. We can reveal more about who's going to be there in the coming episodes. But I always love hearing what people from outside the industry have to say. I think the yachting world can be quite inward facing sometimes, and it's always refreshing to hear some new opinions, however radical they might be. Anyway, if you're coming to the event, you can, of course, challenge those opinions in person, which is always fun as well. There's nothing like a bit of good debate.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's the first event of 2021 we're planning in June in Milan. It's penciled in. Fingers crossed we can get that over the line and the world has returned to some kind of normality by then. The Superyacht Design Festival last year was in February, and that was the last time I was on an aeroplane, which is hard to believe. As everyone knows, you know, in this business, there's so much flying. And so it's almost been a year now for me to not travel by air, which is just mind-blowing. Hell of a change from what it was previously.
I saw a superyacht designer posting on Instagram the other day, a view from a plane window saying, "Ah, it feels good to be back in the air." And I think it's funny for an industry based around the water. I think a lot of the people working in it feel most at home on an aeroplane. So, hopefully we can all get there.
Yeah, definitely. Before I forget, I just wanted to point you to a couple of videos we have on the website. The first is of the gorgeous new 56-meter turquoise yacht Blue 2, which we have a big feature on in the March issue. It is, in fact, the cover boat for the March issue of Boat International. This is such a special boat. Brand new, but with classic lines harking back to a bygone era. And from the evidence I've seen so far, turquoise have done an amazing job on her. And interestingly, despite her slightly, you know, classic Saint-Tropez styling, she was built with an ice class hull, so is in fact an explorer. So it just goes to show you don't need to dress up all rugged to explore the poles. You can do it in very classic style.
I love this boat. When I saw the cover the other day, I mean, I love all of our covers, but I was particularly bowled over by this one. And you hear quite often that designers reference kind of retro styling and the golden age of yachting. But with this one, it really is a kind of really golden age of yachting type, glamorous, amazing boat. And the fact that she's an explorer as well is just really exciting, I think.
Yeah, I'm totally in love with this boat. And I can't find anything wrong with her lines. She's just beautifully proportioned, designed by Andre Hoke, obviously, an interior done by John Vickers, a British designer. And together, it's just so seamless, this boat. It just really, really works. And it's a very calm, cool, laid-back interior. Just right up my street, this boat. I absolutely love it. The other video I wanted to highlight is actually a time-lapse video of the construction of the new 76.5-meter Fedship Boardwalk. I could watch construction time-lapse videos all day long. Despite being in this business for some years now, I'm still awed at how these boats are put together with such precision and how narrow the margins are sometimes when you're getting these things in and out of sheds. And you can see boardwalk being squeezed out of construction halls, people desperately fendering where it's coming a bit too close to the dock sides, and, you know, getting through canals and towns and bridges. There's a great photo actually in the next issue of the magazine as well of boardwalk kind of squeezing through this quaint Dutch village. Really amazing stuff. Lastly, a slightly less fun video of another Fed ship is a brief clip of a fire that broke out at Bahia Mar in Fort Lauderdale as the 56.7 meter Fed ship yacht W was refueling. really luckily no one was hurt and the damage seems to be superficial, which must have been a massive relief for the captain, crew and owner, as she had just completed a 10-month refit and was actually looking really good. And of course she goes, refuels and a fire starts. But like I said, superficial damage, so they should get over that very, very quickly. We'll actually put links to each of these stories we mentioned in the description of the podcast, so you can check out these videos for yourself. But definitely have a look at Blue 2 and definitely check out that time-lapse video because they are brilliant.
So aside from looking at boats on fire, what else have you been up to this week, Stu?
Well, I had a good chat with Star columnist Eddie Jordan yesterday. So Eddie's been out in the Caribbean. He's back now in Cape Town, but he was telling me all about his 3 weeks cruising around Antigua on Blush every year. So he took the whole Jordan clan out there. So there were 16 of the family. And actually they borrowed another boat, Lush, which was Eddie's former boat, the Oyster, to run alongside his Perini Blush. So they had Oyster and Blush and Lush together, sailing together to accommodate all the Jordans. And obviously, and that two boats means two chefs. And apparently both the chefs had a fun competition trying to outdo each other each time. So that's not bad. He told me one funny story, actually. So he's got a favourite restaurant down there. It's called Jackie O's. And he was there for Christmas Day with the family. And they happened to end up sitting next to actor Damian Lewis of Billionaire and Band of Brothers fame and his wife, Helen McCrory of Harry Potter fame. So how's that for a Hollywood power couple? Not bad. So they all went to say, so obviously Eddie got chatting as Eddie does. He talks to everybody. Is the world's chattiest man. So he obviously invited Damien to go sailing with them. So they had a great day out on the water. And he told me that they had to go on the foiling jet board that is one of the toys on Lush. And apparently Damien Lewis was really terrible at it, but better than Eddie. He did concede that he was better at it than Eddie. Anyway, he tells the whole story in the March issue of the magazine. So don't miss that.
I feel like so many of those water toys are designed to embarrass you. There's always someone kind of whizzing around on it looking incredibly stylish. And the moment you have a go, you look like a kind of beached whale flopping about and never pans out quite as you envisage when you see other people having a go.
Well, everything I've heard about those foiling, I've never had a go on one of them, but apparently they are very, very difficult to get the hang of. Super fun once you're up and flying about, but not easy to get there. And they're heavy too. So if you fall off, I saw one horrific injury. Someone got hit by one after falling off. So yeah, be careful. I spoke to another owner not long ago and he said, yeah, wear a helmet when you're learning, because if you fall off and it's whizzing round, it's not, I'm sure there's fail safes, but yeah, they are heavy. So don't get hit.
That sounds terrifying. I just stick to one of those fun air slides. That sounds much softer and more fun if you get into trouble. Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned Eddie's favourite restaurant, actually, because we have a feature coming up shortly where we've been digging deep. It's in our voyage section and our travel section to ask some particularly foodie, fussy owners where their sort of secret hideouts are. So I'm really excited to read that. I was particularly excited to hear there's one in Ibiza that you famously have to scramble over some very jagged, slippery rocks to get to, which sounds sort of hazardous but kind of fun. And in my experience, I tend to find anywhere that's a real trial to get to is always pretty amazing, because most people can't be bothered. So it feels like that could be an interesting read, and lots of suggestions for your bucket list for the next year.
Yeah, absolutely, sounds pretty good to me.
And speaking of features, there's another one I've been working on this week which I found equally fascinating. This piece is about those brave owners that have taken on the challenge of buying an awful, crumbling wreck of a boat and restoring it. It's a great way to lose a lot of money, I'm sure, but I love the romance of some of these old classics that have been found in a sorry state and someone is kind enough to see the potential and bring them back to life again. There are actually so many out there. We're compiling our sort of shortlist at the moment and struggling to narrow the list down. There's more than you might think, given how difficult it is and what a big financial undertaking. A few of my favourites I thought I'd just put here. One is the five-sailing yacht Cambria, which was discovered in a pitiful state in Australia. She's a major classic yacht, and everyone thought that she'd been destroyed in World War II. She wasn't even included in a very authoritative book on the five yachts that was published just before she was discovered. Can you imagine? She was completely written off. There's also Shenandoah, a beautiful 1902 vintage three-masted schooner, which I imagine most people will be familiar with. She was built by Townsend and Downey in New York. She was rotten to the core 20 years or so ago. One of the judges for our World Super Yacht Awards, Roger Lienverkoe, actually saw her then and says he could poke his finger through the engine room deckhead and touch the carpet in the dining room above. So I don't know how that goes down on a survey, but essentially rubbish is what state she was in. Anyway, she was beautifully restored by McCullen and Wing in Auckland for her new owner, who was a Swiss businessman called Philip Bommer, and he undoubtedly saved her from the scrapyard, and now she's owned by an Italian gentleman. So that's a nice story there.
Yeah, I love these stories of saving boats. The famous one, of course, that everyone knows is Endeavour, and Elizabeth Meyer found her basically on the south coast on a mud berth, looking absolutely horrific, and then she restored her to glory. Talking about great rebuilds, actually, I was talking to the owner of a boat called, a motor yacht called Marala yesterday, which is in Pendennis currently in Falmouth, and it's due to be delivered in November this year. But he was telling me, as they were digging down into the bilges, the state of some of the steel they discovered was in a really poor state, kind of poke your finger through it as well. But despite that, the delivery hasn't slipped that much at all, just a couple of weeks. He also said, the boat was requisitioned by the Royal Navy during the Second World War, and they put a really high quality of concrete in the boat as ballast. And he said digging that out of the boat's been a hell of a job, but they've managed to accomplish it. Actually, I'm really looking forward to seeing that boat when it eventually comes out of Pendennis. It should be one of the most spectacular rebuilds that yard has ever done. So we'll obviously feature that a little later in the year as well, or probably early 2022, considering delivery is in November. But we shall see. We'll bring you the story as soon as we possibly can. It will be a really good one.
It's got to be a tense moment with some of these projects, hasn't it? Like, you know it's going to be a complete wreck, but there's got to be a point where there's something that even you thought at least that was safe, and it's not, and it's just adding to the bill. But yeah, if you like this kind of thing, there's another one that's going through the process of its transformation right now as well. I'm fascinated by this one. Western Flyer was actually the yacht that was used by John Steinbeck the year after he published his famous book, The Grapes of Wrath. So how's that for a historical backstory? Steinbeck motored for thousands of miles along the coast of Mexico and California into the Gulf of California. And along with a small crew, they examined and collected marine animals and potted about. Although the trip was the perfect anecdote to a very trying period in history, I'm not sure he loved every minute of it, though. When you look at what he wrote, he said that many things in these waters were poisonous and hurtful, seeming to sting and pinch and bite worse than animals in other places. So, listeners, if you're based out in California, perhaps you can confirm if times have changed, if you're still being eaten alive, or if it's a more hospitable place to take your yacht. Anyway, she's since been rechristened Gemini, and at times her ownership was a bit hazy. She was finally located because her call sign hadn't changed. It's WB4044. And she's come to resemble a ghost ship today, apparently. Sort of paint peeling, mud spattered, strangled by weed. She sunk at least twice, become completely unseaworthy. And all the time, the price for restoration has obviously gone up and up. Anyway, she's now owned by a very brave marine geologist called John Gregg, who's restoring her along with a shipwright named Chris Chase. And our writer, who's a marine historian, he's called James Evans, is going to be speaking to the shipwright who's personally responsible for her. He's called Tim Lee. So I'm so excited to hear what he's doing to bring her back to life. It certainly sounds like quite a challenge.
I admire any owner taking on a project like any of these. The Steinbeck boat, Marala, Shenandoah, Cambria. I mean, it's a kind of a minefield, isn't it? It's the romance. You get stuck on the romance of it, and that's hard to resist. And to restore and bring back a boat with such a brilliant story, but then when it's in the yard, you really discover what you're dealing with. Often halfway through the build, by which time it's kind of too late to turn around. So you've got to go. You've got to be brave. You've got to be brave and prepared to write some big checks along the way. But yeah, the fact that there are people out there with the will and the wallets to take on projects like this and bring them back to life and preserve them effectively for humankind is really, really good. And it's just great to see. And the stories are brilliant.
I never forget, actually, when I was speaking to the owner of Canim over in the States, one thing he said that always stuck with me is that when you do own a yacht like this with this incredible history, the people working on it have such a passion and enthusiasm for it as well. I remember him saying, you know, he has this amazing inlaid wooden floor that the guy who was working on the boat just said, can I do it? You know, I really want to. I'll do it for free. I just want to see it kind of made how it should be. And I do think that's one of the pluses of owning a boat like this, is everyone involved in the project is just as excited as you are.
Yeah absolutely. It must be cool just to cruise into a port in one of these boats as well, because you know it's, you own a museum piece, don't you, really?
Yeah, quite.
Alrighty, in Caroline's absence, it falls to me to whip through the headlines this week, the biggest stories on boatinternational.com, and we start with the news that Rossi Navi has launched Polaris, the 70 meter super yacht previously known as Project King Shark and penned by Enrico Gobbi's team for design. The yacht, which is the largest ever built by Rossi Navi, hit the water at its Via Reggio facility after 4 years in construction. Polaris features an exploration-inspired design, but she also packs on plenty of luxury too, including a dedicated owner's deck with a private terrace and waterfall and a 6-meter infinity pool on the main deck. Now to Swan, meanwhile, has entered the motor yacht market for the first time with this is a beautiful little boat, 13.2-meter chase boat called the Swan Shadow. Able to reach a top speed of 55 knots, the Shadow is designed by Finnish designer Jaakko Jamsen, who you might recall as the designer of Pi, or Syzygy 818, as she was formerly known, and Pi Now, which picked up the Motor Yacht of the Year award recently at the World Superyacht Awards. That was designed by Jaakko Jamsen, and he has also designed the Swan Shadow. Swan president Leonardo Ferragamo said they'd considered producing a motor yacht before, but had always resisted this temptation until we really felt we had something really special. And they've definitely got that with this boat. And obviously the idea is to, you know, people buying Swan sailing boats buy the chase boat to run alongside it as well, and, you know, get sails to shore and crew and that kind of thing as well. So yeah, not a bad accompaniment to your new Swan, the Swan Shadow.
I have to say, I think that guy Jaakko Jamsen is such a talent. Like, he just produces beautiful boat after beautiful boat. They're always incredibly elegant and sleek. And I don't know what he does that other people don't do, but he's doing something because they're always gorgeous.
You're right. And he's got this kind of enigmatic Scandinavian vibe about him too. He's got this big beard. He looks kind of like a lumberjack, Jaakko. And like he lives out in the Finnish woods or something. But in the meantime, in the, you know, spare time, just designs these beautiful boats. Super talented guy. And a World Superyacht Awards winner. Lastly, Italian yard Cantieri Della Marche has launched the 40-meter RJ130 Explorer Superyacht. The first model of the RJ range is designed inside and out by Francesco Paskowski, and naval architecture comes courtesy of Hydrotech. Sold to a Northern European owner, the yacht is described as a luxury explorer. Two other yachts in Cantieri Della Marche's RJ range, RJ11528 and RJ11529, have also been sold and are currently under construction at the yard's Ancona facility. Again, we'll put links to these stories in the description of the podcast so you can check them out for yourself. And going back to Rossi Navi for a second, that new boat, Polaris, has inspired this week's Data Insight, where we have looked at 70-meter plus yachts. That's yachts longer than 70 meters overall. So there are 250 yachts of 70 meters and above currently afloat, and we can break that down a little for you. There are 104 super yachts in the 70 to 80 meter bracket, 57 in the 80 to 90 meter bracket, 34 in the 90 to 100 meter bracket, and there are 56 100 meter plus yachts on the water currently. So that's the current fleet. In build, there are 59 super yachts bigger than 70 meters, 21 between 70 and 80 meters, 13 between 80 and 90 meters, just 3 between 90 and 100 meters, and 22 super yachts of 100 meters or more in build currently. So that's 59 more than 70 meters under construction, which isn't bad, which is actually bloody good, considering there are only 250 70 meter plus yachts on the water currently. Interestingly, however, only two of those 59 70 meter plus boats in build are sailing boats. But 2021 in particular is set to be an extraordinary year for 70 meter plus boats. Since 2011, the number of 70 meter plus boats launched each year has hovered around the 11 to 13 mark, with a low of 9 and a high of 19. But this year, 24 yachts of 70 meter plus are expected to hit the water. So it just goes to show you what a bumper year 2021 will be for these biggest super yachts. And some of the biggest boats being launched this year will be the giant 140-meter plus Explorer Solaris, being built at Lloyd Werft in Germany, Lursen's 115-meter Enzo, and Ocean Co's 117-meter Y719 and 109-meter Y720. So a bumper year ahead for 70-meter plus super yachts being launched. All these figures are derived, don't forget, from our market intelligence platform, Boat Pro, and you can check that out for yourself over at boatinternational.com. So that's it for this week. That's all the news and insight we have for you. Without further ado, here is Caroline's interview with Raphael, the CEO of Fraser.
Raphael Solo, it is a pleasure to have you with us today. Raphael is CEO of the major brokerage house Fraser, and he has been in that role since 2016, I believe. Is that right, Raphael?
All right, yes. And I'm very nice to be with you today. Thank you.
Good. Well, to start off, we thought it would be quite nice to discuss a little bit about you, where you came from, your background. So to start off, could you tell me about your upbringing, where you grew up, what kind of a child you were, that sort of thing?
Sure. Well, I was born in the south, in the west part of France, a little town, a mid-sized town called Angers, which is basically located between Paris and the Atlantic shore of France. You know, you may know the resort La Baule and Pouliguen and all these places. So it's right in the middle. So I grew up in this very peaceful environment, and I was very lucky to have some family members with boats, actually. Yeah. So I was able to enjoy sailing some summers. So we would go away for a month and going between La Rochelle, Sable d'Olonne, Ile d'Oléron, Ile Dieu. So this is probably where I first enjoyed the sea, as per se, because Angers, besides rivers and good wine, has very, very little sea. And then I did my scholarship in Angers. And then, strangely enough, I was in the hospitality kind of desire to study. So I did a few school applications and ended up in Nice, where I did a 3 years scholarships, and then I moved on to England, and then back to France, where I was managing restaurants and hotels for a little while. And then I guess the sea called me back, and I had the opportunity to go and work on board cruise liners, which I did for about 6 to 7 years. And that was a wonderful opportunity for a young person like me to not only see the world, but make money seeing the world. So, and I think the cruise industry is a great school to learn discipline and also live in community, as you share accommodations. So that was hard work, but good fun. And moreover, you know, a chance to see basically the entire world, as I did a couple of world tours at the time. And when this came to an end, I moved on shoreside and stayed in Monaco. I think I took my suitcase off the boat. And in Monaco, I was offered a position with the leader in ship management in the world called V-Ships, where I worked into the HR division in cruise line initially, and then the entire HR, including cargo ships, where we had over 25,000 seafarers under our responsibility. And then after this, of course, I married my wife, and I moved on to a family office, to open a family office in Monaco. And I had a very good opportunity to come close to yachting, as per se, even though I had a little experience with V-ships, managing yachts and crewing. That boss had a few yachts. So we run the yachts and also some hotels. And when the family office was up and running, we also took care of many other activities, philanthropy, and that was a very first experience for a private owner. And then came an opportunity with Fraser a few years down the line, which obviously I was very kind to accept, and or very happy to accept, I should say. And here we go, 5 years into the role, having a lot of fun in a very interesting yet challenging but remarkable industry.
Absolutely. So I understand that you're only Fraser's fifth CEO in a history that spans more than 70 years.
Right.
What do you think, as an outsider, you've brought to the business that's so valuable to Fraser?
Oh, well, I think Fraser was doing very well before me and will do very well after me. I think one of the things which probably I brought into Fraser, it's like, you know, maybe a new dynamic for someone who actually didn't come from Yachting. The previous CEOs were pure Yachting guys, I would say, and they were really commercially oriented individual with a lot of talents. Whilst, you know, I came from, I would say, the other side of the fence, being in the family office, whereby I probably had a vision in terms of what we expect as a family office, as an owner, as a service, and the importance of the attention to detail. They also, I think, I had a very, I have an eye into developing Fraser all around. You know, of course, we have a strong focus in brokerage. And as you know, like many of our competitors, we offer all the services within Yachting. And I saw also the opportunity for us at the time to grow within yacht management, which I think is a key component today of a brokerage house, which we did because we doubled almost in 5 years. And I also wanted to reinforce the fact that Fraser should be visible on all segment markets, not only one or two or three, but, you know, from 24 meters up to 110 meters. And with the help of the team and our very talented brokers and support team, we've been able to achieve this today. I think Fraser can be proud to be visible in all segment markets, maybe selling a 24 meter or selling a 100 meter. So I think that would be the initial achievements, which I will see obviously our team achievement, not only mine. Of course, we have also a big ambition for the future, such as developing Fraser even further. And I believe this is probably something you will discuss later in this interview.
Exactly, we will. So taking a step back from Fraser to the industry as a whole, now that you've had such a focus on it for these years, what do you think you would change about the industry if you could? That could be rules, regulations, culture, anything.
Well, I think the industry is already going through transformation. I think there is definitely, as the previous years show, an increase in business. We get more customers. Of course, we always would like to get more customers, but there's definitely increase of customers within your team. One of the things which I'd like to achieve, and I think we are in the process to achieving so, is to make sure the yachting industry is displayed to the outside world, to an industry as per se, and a real segment of the maritime industry, whereby, you know, jobs are being offered, we have a craftsmanship which are being redeveloped or enhanced with the shipyard, new technology being worked on in the shipyard. And of course, we have the glitzy and the glamour of yachting, but it's not only this. I think we're going through the process now. I think the world is seeing yachting in a different eye, and I think we need to improve this. Also, of course, we are doing a lot of work in terms of sustainability, environment preservation, and I think we must do more on the yachting side to see also that this is not only people having fun on the yacht, you know, popping champagne in Saint-Tropez, much more than that. So I think that is something I'd like to be more out there for the non-yachty experienced crowd. What else? I think it's also important to be a bit more transparent when it comes to data and make sure that, you know, there's nothing to hide. Of course, sometimes it is clear that the price of the sale of a yacht cannot be disclosed for obvious reasons, but at least, you know, what the industry does in terms of transaction, the number of charter per year, all these kind of things, you know, there's no shame to be successful. And I believe it is very good to display that it is an industry which is going rather strong for many years now. It creates a lot of employment, allows new technologies to be developed. And all of this is possible because it's obviously successful. If it was not, then we would not be able to improve and progress as we do today. So these are the few points, obviously, which even though they are work in progress, I think there are still some things which we can do there in that direction.
Absolutely. Interesting ideas there. So turning to last year and the extraordinary challenges that it provided for the industry, what impact has the epidemic and the related global recession had on the superyacht industry in what you've seen? And what do you think the outlook is for this year?
Look, it has been, I would say, an incredible year for many reasons. And, you know, obviously the first impact is the pandemic. And unfortunately, we're not out of it yet, as we see around the world. We all hopefully want it to be finished rather sooner than later. But of course, when it kicked in for us European and of course Americans a little later in February, March 20, we were like, what's happening? What's going to happen? You know, no one had any idea of how long it will last, the effect on the economy, the effect on politics, and clearly the effect on business. So I think we were all sitting tight and see, okay, how this is going to unfold. So we all went into a very quiet mode, I think, and I can speak for the yachting industry. Everything stopped. And then the phone started ringing again for cancellation on charter or postponements. So like we were like, oh boy, what is going to be in 2020? And then the lockdown went into force and the restriction for traveling and the visa, all the requirements for go from A to B. So clearly the first effect were into a charter. Initially, you know, all the bookings which were made, then we were trying to rebook, postpone, put some addendum in place to protect owners and clients alike. So that was quite busy actually to work on this. And then I think the industry was extremely reactive in terms of how we're going to be able to carry on communicating with our clients, show them boats, show them destination, even though it's a big question mark ahead of us. We just cannot stop and stay still. So many of us, if not all of us, really took a lot of initiative initially digitally and new technology, you know, obviously use of Zoom, Facebook Live, and you name it. Were one way to do things. Then we saw a lot of digital walkthrough to send to clients so they could see the boats. And then the sky became clearer again. We saw more interest when the lockdown were initially lifted around spring. We saw some customers getting more active and asking more information about boat, more information about walkthroughs. The charter clients came out of the woods and say, you know what, let's try to book a charter for this summer, blah, blah, blah. So it all started again, slowly, but surely. And of course, we were all very aggressive into communicating with our client base, which maybe we did better than we did before. And suddenly, you know, on the sales front, especially, we saw an increase of requests and clearly an increase of sales starting from June. To the extent of June, July, August, September, we doubled the number of sales as an industry versus 2019. So that was quite an incredible process. The charter was a little slower, not because we didn't get any customers, but because there was nowhere to go. There were restrictions in Europe, some difficulties to go to some other places with quarantine. So charter, I think, took a toll last year, but not as bad as we all thought it would be. And sales carry on really going and going and going to the point that at the end of the year, you know, we saw that 2020 was the best year ever since the sale of second-hand boats over 24 meters are recorded. So 2020 was the best year ever in number of sales. So, I mean, somebody would have told me that in March, I would have said, really? Get a life. It's not possible. But it is the case. And the industry saw so many sales. Fraser itself, I think we have had, in terms of sales, an incredible number of boats being sold. Wow. From 24 meters to higher segment market. So that's very encouraging. And I think that sends a signal that pandemic is pushing people to maybe rethink their life or reprioritize and saying, you know what? We need to enjoy life. We need to have fun. We wanted a yacht for so many years. We never did. Maybe it's the time. Maybe it's a sign. And we've seen this influx of sales. It's been very interesting. And we haven't had to the extent, or we've sold a few boats through a Zoom call, for example, which is not heard of. You know, yeah, Zoom visit, not many of them, but a few, based on a Zoom visit. And 2021 seems to be still rather active. I mean, the economy, strangely enough, the stock market is still react positively to the events. So I think whoever has the means and still keeps on being rather successful, if they wish to go ahead and purchase a yacht, I think today that pandemic triggered something. and they just decide to go ahead. On the charter front, again, it's not a matter of lack of demand. It was a matter of lack of destination and lack of possibility to go somewhere. Mm. So I think let's see what the next quarter unfold with the pandemic's re-strengthening itself. But I believe if the vaccines are being given to many and we can reopen the world and somehow the economy by spring, I foresee a strong demand in charter. Now, what we may face this year is a possible lack of inventory because we postponed a lot of charters from last year. So many boats are going to be already busy with last year's booking. So that may be a challenge. But as I'll say, you know, it's a good challenge. And that's why we encourage our clients to book early enough. Now we know we have a lot of addendums and contracts which protects both ends of the equation. So, I mean, if you really want to charter, it's actually the right time to book.
Okay, fantastic. So could you tell me specifically for Fraser, how did the business respond to the crisis? Did you put any kind of measures in place? Did you react as a business?
Yeah, we internally we had to take all the decision in getting our people to work from home. And I have to say we were kind of ready for it because this is something we've been doing for some time now. So it was not a painful exercise like some others may have had technologically speaking. So we were reactive and able to act upon our strategy immediately. So as I said earlier, we really increased our work through new technology. We implemented a new CRM, which allowed us to also be able to be in contact with our customers in a prompter manner, follow up on our leads. We really increased the number of videos on board our yachts. And of course, we've been using the digital tools as much as we could. So, and we have been rather successful in doing so. So whilst our charter, like most of our competitors, has been not as good as we all expected it will be, it has been a rather mitigated impact with probably 25-30% less activity than 2019, which is, considering the situation, not so bad. And in terms of sales, I think like many, we've had a very, very good year, very strong year in 2020 with many, many sales. And 2021 starts on the good ground again. So I think we are very fortunate that we've been able to go through this pandemic in a relatively positive manner.
Is there any change you've found in 2020 in the type of boats that clients are looking for? So perhaps they're looking for expedition yachts that can spend longer periods at sea, completely self-sufficient, or are they looking for smaller family yachts just for small family groups, anything like that?
We haven't seen a strong trend. Obviously, trends were already occurring before the pandemic, such as obviously Explorer. So that's still ongoing, I think. One of the trends, I will say, which the pandemic trigger will be the fact that people who normally will charter decided to buy their own yacht and actually manage the process themselves. So that kind of get back to what you're saying, you know, instead of getting and chartering somebody else's boat, maybe they now want to have their own and make sure this is a process they can manage. They can go on their boat when they want. They are sure about the procedures on board, etc. So that could be something which explain why we have had such a rush on sales. In terms of the boat themselves, I think before the pandemic, some trends were initiated, such as obviously very sustainable yachts, are environmental friendly. So we still see it happening. Also probably larger open space, more lights. But in terms of drastic changes from what we know of yachting today, no, that there's no set trend yet that I can see myself.
Okay. And could you tell us, looking to the future, how do you expect the global superyacht market to evolve in the coming years? For example, in terms of demand, where will demand come from in the world, and how companies will operate as well? So perhaps more kind of value added services, anything like that?
Well, I think in terms of the geographic demand, there's a driving force for years now, and it's been even proven the last couple of years, it's the US. US have been extremely active on the yacht market, both sales and charter. So I think, as far as I can recall, it represents at close to 50% of the yachting activity. Then you have had some trends with Eastern Europeans, mainly Russians. And then, of course, you have the Middle Eastern. Everybody expects Asia to come up with miracles. I mean, people have expected this for years now. Once we see more Asian buyers, undoubtedly, I don't see it as being a revolution in the next years. I think everybody initially expected a lot from China, but we all know that the regime in China doesn't necessarily is compatible with yachting ownership. So that's probably something which will occur, but in a very slow manner, if it does. Now you still have people from Taiwan, Hong Kong, part of Shanghai, but obviously a bit more flexible, who are going into yachting. And we saw an increase, but these are not tremendous numbers. So I think the way forward is definitely US still being a key component in the yachting industry. And then you will have this mix still with Russian, Middle Eastern, South American, and of course European. Now we'll see what the Brexit does to how Brexit is going to impact the UK ownership going forward, because there's a lot of British owners, and let's see how this impact the yachting ownership going forward. But I don't see drastic changes in the way the national channelity breakdowns is today. I think this would probably last for a few years and after. At least I see, this is what I think. I mean, 1 year, the US may be stronger up to 60%, 40% another year, and it will be hopefully compensated by others. But I think the breakdown is pretty much what it is today.
Okay. And for Fraser specifically, you've mentioned some of the changes that you've made at the company. Are there any specific areas of the business that you'd like to continue to develop at Fraser or will look to develop in the future? So will the company look very different in 5 to 10 years' time, do you think?
Well, I think your thing itself may look a little bit different going forward in the way we operate. I think the traditional way of getting to clients and getting your company exposed may change a little in upcoming very near future, whereby the use of technology, the use of communication to reach out to clients and new clients will certainly differ from the traditional ways we've known for the last 15 years. That would be a primary change. In terms of us as a company, I mean, we will still carry on, obviously, doing what we do. And I still think it's very important today to have a very strong yacht management division. You know, the rules and regulations are ever-changing within the maritime world. So I see some more changes in the future, and I see the need for the owners to work together with a manager to support their activity. So that's one area whereby we will definitely keep on investing and working hard. Obviously, the brokerage world is a key component of any yachting house today. And I think the mix of good technology, good exposure, and communication will be also a key for development forward. Now, also, there have been a lot of talk about consolidation and companies working together or being acquired by larger companies. I mean, ourselves, we are an example, as we've been acquired by MarineMax a year or so ago, and then they acquired Northrop & Johnson. So this is also something which is in process and clearly will become a benefit for some when you align forces and technology, know-how, and experience. That's also probably a way which will reshape the yachting in the near future.
Thank you, Raphael. Okay, I think that's about it. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate
Thank you.
It. And, pleasure. Good luck, Fraser, in 2021.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Ed Cavendish and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.